Community and Whole meeting to order. I'll ask the clerk to take the roll call.
Trustee Corsini?
Here.
Trustee Karci?
Here.
Trustee Stanky? Trustee Conti?
Here.
Trustee Dwyer?
Here.
Trustee Gibbs?
Here.
President Ducey?
Here. Okay, so you're going to talk about the capital improvement program, so I will let Eric proceed.
Thank you, and good evening, everyone. This is our annual discussion regarding our capital improvement program. As you know, it's a five-year planning document that we put together, post on our website, make available to the public so people are aware of not only what we plan on spending this coming fiscal year, and that's where we'll spend a majority of our conversation tonight, but then we can look out the 4 years after that so folks know that there's some foresight and some planning as it pertains to our capital budget.
Apparently, clickers has to be a part of the capital budget.
Next.
Yeah.
I was freezing up. All right, stand by. All right, so I'll.
You're not getting better.
The TV businesses is where we would kill time here. All right.
Cheers.
So within the capital budget, and you all have a the PowerPoint for tonight in front of you as well. So in case. Oh the kids at Microsoft. Oh. PowerPoint is not responding. For the record, it responded very nicely this morning, but allegedly, exactly. So why do we do this? Again, it's a five-year outlook. We look at all our inputs and outputs, right? We look at where the money's coming from and what we're spending that money on. From a transparency tool, it allows everyone, not only residents, but business owners, bond rating agencies, all those folks to know where our dollars are being spent. And this isn't approval. Keep in mind, this is just a planning document. So there's no approval necessarily of the capital improvement program tonight. Eventually, what we do is then, we'll take any feedback you all may have, and then we'll wrap that in and make that a part of the operating budget as we move forward. Within your PowerPoint handout that I have, we have our little diagram that talks about all the fun acronyms that we use. And so I just leave that with you as a resource guide, if you will, in case I start using more acronyms and you're not sure what that means. In terms of the categories, we break the CIP up into six categories: building improvements, vehicles, equipment, IT, streets, sidewalks, and alleys, and then our water and sewer improvements. And then those are all funded through various sources: general fund, MFT, water and sewer, our SURF fund, which is capital equipment, the water and sewer SURF, and then capital improvement fund, and then any grant revenues or parking reserves that we get from our parking, daily parking and permit parking fees. So we'll wait 1 second to see if we can get this thing fired up here. Two of the upgrades we'll be talking about during IT are an upgrade in computers for the staff and also for Microsoft Office. So on some level, these technical difficulties are appropriate.
This is set up.
It is, yes. I planned this meticulously for this all to just fall apart at this moment.
Excellent execution.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Is it not letting you open it? Oh, there we go. Okay.
Good job, Lisa.
So we're on slide six. There we go. Here we go. All right, facilities projects for next year at Village Hall. We have a couple things we're looking at doing, and then also at the Public Works Garage and Pump Station, which really comprise our three facilities within the municipal organization. Over at Village Hall, we have the air conditioning units separated between Westcom and Village Hall. So that unit, the HVAC unit, air conditioning units due for replacement. That's a cost of about $25,000. And then in terms of the second floor improvements, and certainly as we get into more details, we will share these with you before, because obviously we would have to go to bed, and before we do that, we'd want to have a conversation with the board. But one of the things we've run into on the second floor from a customer service perspective, when you walk up to the second floor, there's just the one the one window. And so at times, things can get a little bit backlogged over there. And what we have found is there are really three types of customer service issues or types that we run into. So you've got the general general customer service issues where people want to pay a water bill, pay a ticket, just have a quick transaction and kind of go about their merry way. And then there's two other transactions that require a little bit more hand-holding or time, one of which is on the building side. So someone may come up and need to talk to Cliff or talk to Lisa or talk to someone, Carol, to understand their permit, and we want to kind of move them off to the side a little bit and have that conversation. Then the other thing that will come up at times is someone needs to speak with someone from the police department. And those conversations tend to be somewhat personal in nature, depending on the transaction that took place between the individual, maybe the relative in the police department. So we actually want to separate them off a little bit more. And so what we're looking at right now is an expansion of the existing window to open it up more, and then also create a secondary window for the police department that would actually be secure. That's someone where there's a, if you know, there's a bulletin board up on the second floor, that would actually be a door. They would walk through it. There would be a separate counter there. And then that would all be independent of what's going on at the main counter. And so we've gone through a couple different variations of this with an architect, actually the same architect that designed the building, folks from FGM. They've started to put some schematics together. The initial plans were about $350,000 just to do all that work. We've dialed that back a little bit to try to do it just to the brass tacks, and their latest estimate came in a little bit over $200,000. So we left the $350,000 in from a planning standpoint because we know we have to come back to you all to further vet that, but that's ultimately what that's about and what we're looking at trying to do. And then long-term, in terms of secondary phases, we would look to replace some of the furniture up there, a lot of the workstations for the employees. Things are starting to fall apart. That stuff was all bought used when the Village Hall was reconstructed. So that stuff is in need of some love. And then also replacing the carpeting up there at some point as well. And those would be in second and third year phases. So that's the vision with those requests there.
I'm sure that you guys thought of this already, but just for my own mindset, would it be more streamlined to keep the police stuff on the first floor? Since everything, isn't most of the police activity down here?
It's a possibility, but I guess I would say everyone from administration and all the offices are upstairs. So, you know, there's sometimes people come in and, as you know, they'll pick up the phone and an officer will come in and talk to them. Yeah. Other times, and Greg can go into probably more detail with this, but they may have a situation where someone's been arrested. They may have their car's been impounded. There's just other sensitive things that you don't want to have that conversation with someone at the same time while they're, you know, someone's paying their water bill or getting their vehicle sticker.
No, that's why I'm wondering, has it ever been considered to move those people instead of making them go upstairs? Can we put a window down here instead for police stuff?
I don't think we have the footprint down here to do that.
That's all I was curious about.
Some of it is, like Eric was saying, some of it's records related, and then that means that the whole records department would have to move down there, or they'd be going two places anyways.
Yeah, okay. So, just curious.
I thought about that, but I don't think we have the footprint to do it on the first floor.
Because, you know, just touching on the idea that usually the people that are here to see something police related, you probably, if you could avoid have them dealing with the general public in the same lobby, avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the idea of that
side window.
Yeah. Right. Side door, there would be a door, you would open a door and step into a separate area, and there would be another window behind that.
Well, tragically, in this day and age, that's probably a good idea.
I mean, have we had any incidents that kind of prompt us other than just kind of inconveniences?
I think we're looking at it just from the prism of just general customer service for all of our customers. So it's really twofold. So occasionally we'll get backed up because there's not that much counter space up front. So if we have building or police issues going on and a resident comes in and just wants to pay their water bill, they're kind of stuck in the back while we're jimmying these folks around. So the one thought is, A, you just open that front counter up so there's just physically more space and people can spread out a little bit. And then secondarily, because the police issues are sensitive, you know, you're dealing with people who have been arrested, vehicles have been impounded, there's been potential criminal activity, and there has to be a discussion between either the someone with the arrestee and the police officers or a clerk, we just think it's best to just kind of separate them out and move them over.
Do you have to staff that window then? I mean, would you have to have someone there during work business hours?
Well, I think what would happen is we still want, my vision, still have that front counter as your intake, right? So when they come in and say, hey, my police, my brother got arrested and I have to help gather his belongings or something, we'd say, okay, mister, why don't you step over to this window here, we'll go over there. And Donna, who usually would come up to the front counter, she would go over to the side counter.
Okay. They'd be able to see it.
Yeah.
So they'd be able to see it.
To answer the question about have we had an incident, we have had an incident, which is one of the reasons why Steph is now staying until 7 o'clock on Mondays.
Right. So. Yeah, those are, we do have supervisor coverage when we're open late on Monday nights as well for that reason.
Now, I'm going to look at this as like a safety issue, but have we ever considered putting a glass, I mean, even when you open up this counter, just having a glass barrier for...
That's not in the plan.
Okay. I mean, if you look at most municipal cars.
What's that going to do? You have a bomb.
For the police window.
Right, but not for the regular counter. Okay.
No.
Right.
And sometimes, like with community development, they're looking at plans.
Right.
They've got them laid out. So it'd be really, if you had glass, I don't know how you accomplish that.
Plus, do those folks actually come into the office when they're interacting with Cliff, and I mean, where do we host people that are looking at public?
It really depends on the issue and the question. So if there's a meeting schedule, typically there's that small conference room off to the side, they'll come in there and they'll roll out their plans and talk. Sometimes a lot of people, not to steal a line from Seinfeld, but people from the building industry love the pop-in. So they love the pop-in and say, hey, I want to come in and talk to you. And you know, and so Cliff comes out, and that's what we do, right? And then they're just, hey, here are my plans. Here's what I want to do. And so we, and that's fine. We're willing to accommodate that. We just then, you've got other people coming in, and we want to just kind of shift them off to the side.
Yeah. And another aside. And then the lobby's fairly large up there.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could maybe use the space better.
Well, one of the original, the $350,000 expense talked about a complete reconfiguration of that front counter where we do like a semicircle. We take up that conference room, we would move the conference room somewhere else. One of the other thoughts and phases in 2 and 3 is that we've gone through and we've scanned a considerable amount of documents that are in the basement, so we can take some of the other documents that we have to hang on to by law, move those downstairs, and then we could look at even putting more cubicles or offices or moving things around. I mean, we're trying to provide flexibility long term. So we just saw this price tag for $350,000. We all kind of looked at each other like, that's...
Get it down to 2. That was
your money. Yeah,
it's
a lot of money.
Like a drafting table or something like that if you needed to.
Thank you, prevailing wage. Yes.
Moved?
Can what's that?
Weight bearing or anything? Those lobby walls?
I don't.
Anybody know?
Where the windows, they were going to move that out, so yeah. The walls out there. There are some spaces where they can't move it. Like,
yeah.
But like if you're standing at the counter, there's the little conference room on the right.
Right.
And the police would be on the left. Is there any way to bring that whole wall out?
That's what they're talking about.
To make that.
Where those two seats are and that big.
Because go along with what Susan said, I mean, really, for the general public, that lobby could be half as big.
Well, the police area is going to come out into that lobby, so that will use some of that space.
I think for time's sake, I think all these are great questions, and it sounds like there's probably a need for it. I just want to make sure we don't lose our time here.
Right.
So all these are great comments. I think the key is, you know, when it sounds like we need it, let's... Mm-hmm. Begin the next process of talking, you know, more in detail.
Yeah, what we would do, the next step would be is once we've shored up kind of our concept plans, we'd bring those to you, have you review those, and then do construction documents and go to bed.
All right.
Over at the garage, we've this year and then next year, we're going to spend additional funds to make some of those structural repairs that we've been putting off for several years. So that's what a lot of these garage improvements are. It's windows, it's overhead doors, it's working on brick repair and masonry work, and so that's where a lot of that significant, those dollars are spent. So that's one big pot of money for next year. And then also at the pump station, there's some work with working on the roof there, the boiler, the heating systems, and then some painting of metal soffits, fascia, stuff like that.
Did we ever put in what window replacement for the second floor on that pumping station?
We've been looking at that, and that's something we were going to try to do this year. We very well may move that to next year. Much like the issue we had with the door, the windows are custom, and there are some structural elements behind the windows that makes it challenging to even install them. So we're still trying to figure that out right now and what that's going to look like and what that's going to be. We've actually had some conversations. I know Mark met with one of the HPC commissioners to try to get some advice. You know, we have talked about the resources we have and about how do we go about this. So more to follow on that. But unfortunately, it's a beautiful building exterior-wise. Interior provides some challenges for us. All right, so that's it for facilities. Moving ahead to vehicles, we'll start with the police department. Each year, we've typically replaced about three vehicles. The mileage on those vehicles has been lower than what we normally expect. Some of that has been because the vehicles were in accidents and had to be replaced. So that brought in a replacement vehicle on the insurance side. But we're looking at two police vehicles for next year at about $42,000 and $38,000. The existing vehicles will be kept within the fleet and used as secondary vehicles for the police department. And just should be pointed out for squad car 1 and 13, the amounts that are in the budget include, that's the all-in amount, right? So that's not just the cost of the vehicle, that's the vehicle, the light package, the markings, everything to get it road ready for the police department. On the fire vehicle side, as you recall, last year you approved a bid to replace engine 226. That vehicle is in the process of being manufactured. We'll make we'll have an installment payment on that vehicle later this fiscal year, and then the balance of that will be next year. So really what you're looking at is just the accounting breakdown, more or less, of how we're going to pay for that. But nothing, it's not a new vehicle or anything like that. And then on the public works side, you have two vehicles for replacement. You have one of the international dump trucks and then one of the cargo vans. Actually, in a couple weeks, we'll be bringing to you at the next board meeting a purchase of one of the replacement dump truck vehicles for this fiscal year. So this is a vehicle for next year. The vehicles have been working pretty well, so we've actually kind of pushed those out in later years. But now they're, as they start to get old, they start to they're coming due for replacement. It's important to point out, at least for the international, certainly they're not cheap. It's $160,000, but that is one of our frontline vehicles for snow plowing and then also for leaf removal as well. And that does come fully loaded with a snow plow on it.
What's the life expectancy for one of those, Mark?
I think we have the replacement schedule about 12 years. We've been pushing them out. We've got one that's 20 years old this year.
Is that a good plan or a bad plan?
Well, when we get to the point of diminishing returns, then we push them out the door and we auction them off. So that's where we're at with the vehicles. And we do hold on to them as long as we can until they start costing us money, and then it's like, so we watch that closely.
Okay. Now moving into equipment. This is the overview of all the equipment purchases for next year. We'll start on the police side. The live scan system, that's essentially the automated fingerprint system that the county requires. We've actually, just within the last couple weeks, received the hardware for that. So that has come in. We don't know when the county's going to set it up, and we don't know yet if we're going to be billed for it. So it's still in this budget. There's a chance we, you know, even though we've received everything this year, we're not sure when we're going to get invoiced and when that's going to take place. So right now we're leaving it in the plan for next year as well. The county has at times not charged us for certain public safety equipment. So, hey, you know, keep your fingers crossed. So we'll see how that all shakes out. The truck scales, this is another one of those pieces of equipment we see in the capital improvement program each year, that the equipment works. It's functional, but it has exceeded its useful life. So we do budget for it each year, although if it keeps working, we don't replace it. And so we'll talk. We've got a couple more of those in the budget, but the truck scales are a good example of that, and that's used for overweight vehicles in town when they are pulled over, and a lot of times that happens on specific traffic missions. And then the street camera system, this is kind of a two-parter. The first one is the upgrade of the software and the equipment for the existing system that is primarily in the Lake Street corridor. That is a cost of about $100,000. And then there had been some discussion about an upgrade to the system, or I should say strike that, an expansion of the system, and looking at four additional cameras along Lake Street. This would be between Lathrop and Thatcher, looking at the further business corridor, Keystone Park, and the area surrounding the train. That would be an additional $40,000-some-odd. And that would tie into the existing system.
Would the cameras cover that tunnel that goes under the tracks?
We haven't decided yet where the camera would. I don't think maybe you have. I don't know.
Well, we haven't picked the exact locations yet. That's one of the places that we'll definitely look at, because we'll have to see if there's those streetlights are energized in that area.
Yeah, okay. Because that thing's creepy.
Is that creepy?
That tunnel that serves that metro track.
Yeah. And we'll also look into see if metro will assist.
Let us do the platform, yeah. Too.
Or even want to be a partner with us in some of these purchases. So, more to follow on that.
Would this be the? I went to visit the boys for the annual donut visit in the Public Works building, and it was brought to my attention that they don't have the defibrillators there. Is this the section where those would be? If we were thinking about.
That would probably not qualify as a capital expense under our threshold, but that's something we can look to do.
You mean after you ate all those donuts, they were asking about them?
Well, one guy actually did grab his chest, so.
Yeah, that's scary.
That one extra munchkin he had.
See, the new model is we give everyone pedometers, right?
Nice.
And so,
nice.
Right. Okay. Cars are part of our wellness program. Okay. Moving along to the fire department side, again, the SCBA air compressor, this is much like the overweight truck scales. They're in the budget every year. The equipment is crucial and critical to the operation of the department, but continues to work, and so we'll continue to budget it and hopefully not have to replace it anytime soon. So,
no grant opportunities for those? I know we've tried, but no grant opportunities for SCUBA?
Probably not.
Okay. All right.
Try to maximize as many as we can get.
Okay.
And once again, the fire grants that come out, it's usually for sometimes they call it shovel-worthy.
Okay.
That's something.
That equipment. Thank you.
And then in the Public Works Department, we have a replacement of one of the vehicle-mounted salt spreaders that goes on the back of one of the dump trucks, and that is $16,000. Okay, moving along. Information technology. First thing, we replaced Lisa's laptop.
Network.
Network, and then the laptop.
We
need a wireless network.
Yes, we do. That's going to be done this year, though. That's already budgeted. They're working on that.
We've already purchased some equipment.
Yep.
Next up, installation.
Yep. So moving along on the overview of that, again, we're going to continue to spend a considerable amount of resources beefing up our infrastructure on the IT side, on the network. A lot of the things we're going to do this year talks about redundancy of our servers and our services in terms of backups. Working with Public Works and making sure that we have the appropriate backup over there. So we're going to continue to back up to the cloud. We're going to back up to Public Works and use those resources appropriately, and then make sure everything's wired up to that effect. One of the things on this slide here talks about an upgrade to Springbrook. If you recall, Springbrook is our ERP that handles our accounting software, payroll, our accounts payable, water billing. We're about due for an upgrade to that software. So we're going to do that. That is to the tune of about $21,000. We talked about PC replacement. We have spent a lot of money the last couple of years on the network. That has not allowed us to replace a lot of the computers. Now that we've been able to do that, we're going to go back and replace a lot of the working units for the staff We're looking at a cost of about $43,000. One of the things we want to do as part of that is create a standardization to those computers so that when they're rolled out by the IT company, it's basically an image that's the same for all those units. Landon, yep.
Did we get all the security stuff worked out from the issue that we had?
Yes, yeah, we've gotten, that's all been, unless I'm missing something.
And it's locked down as securely as you can get a network locked down.
Yeah.
The only perfectly secure network is one no one ever uses.
Right.
So we've completed a lot of the projects this year that allow us to route traffic in the appropriate fashion. Okay. And the wireless connection piece is really the last piece of that, but we had to really reconfigure how the network was entangled and essentially split the networks between the village and dispatch for a variety of reasons, but also if they ever move off site, now we have to deal with that down the road. So all of that had to be done before we could start to tackle the Wi-Fi piece. I think there's one little wrinkle to work out with dispatch, but the majority of that work is already done.
In terms of on the software side, one of the other things we're looking at is an upgrade to what we call the land and licensing software. So software that deals with our building permits, with other items related to geofiles. So Springbrook as a company was bought out by a company called Excella. And Excella is doing some things, some innovative things. And so they have a program that they're running out, which we're going to look at that would have an upgrade to our building permits, our business licenses, all those things, to try to automate that as much as possible. There are other players, though, in that industry. So we are budgeting the money, but we haven't yet made a determination in which direction we're going to go in, whether we stay with the Excella Springbrook platform or we go in a different direction. There's different schools of thought on that. Some say you put all your eggs in one basket and then everything works together. That has some benefits. The other thought behind that, though, the competing thought, is that one company usually isn't good at everything, and so you try to break that out and go to the companies that do specialize in certain things. And some of the conferences that we've gone to, we've seen companies that really have made a lot of upgrades and just focus in the on the building side. And so, trying to automate permits, things like that, is something we want to look at. If you got the one through Excella, yes, then they talk to each other. You know, one of the things I found is, you know, anyone will tell you that they can write a link to the software, and then we've done that before, you go down that road and it doesn't work, right? So some of the folks in that realm aren't as sophisticated as we'd like them. So we usually go in to the default over at Springbrook, but, you know, there are other options available to us, so we're going to research those before we make a decision.
Springbrook still meeting our general needs?
I would say so. Our general needs, yeah. Is that a rousing endorsement?
Yeah. No, I mean, okay. I know it's always after a while, you know, these.
You know, I've worked in a lot of different programs. None of them are perfect, yeah. Right? The customer service kind of does this sometimes. We're starting to work our way back up ever since. I think what happened was when they got bought out, the transition was a little tough. So on the day-to-day stuff, it does it. Utility billing, general ledger, cash receipts, I think it does a pretty good job.
Okay.
You know, the building permit side, though, for example, is clunky. And we went down that road, and I think that's why we want to reevaluate it. Backup expansion, again, this kind of ties into some of the other things we've talked about expanding existing storage backup for our surveillance camera system as well as the in-car cameras. So one of the other upgrades that we are working on right now, along with the Wi-Fi, is we're replacing all the in-car cameras in the squads. And so it's a significant cost. It's great technology. Actually, we had an incident the other day, and we were able to look live stream what was going on with the police vehicles as the incident was taking place. The technology is great. However, the pictures are great. They're a higher quality. That takes up more space, and so we need some additional storage for that.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the Office 365 migration, so I think that's pretty self-explanatory. And then we also talk about other disaster recovery software. In the event something were to happen catastrophic at Village Hall, we want to be able, which, as we know, has happened previously, we want to have the ability to not only recover our network, but recover it in a very timely fashion. And so this upgrade would allow us to do this. The other thing, too, that I glossed over that I'll jump back to, the mobile device management. Again, we're all using tablets. We're using cell phones. You all will have laptops as well pretty soon. And so in the event those things get lost and they have data access somewhere, this software allows us to manage that, disable phones and tablets and things like that and shut it down so that in the future, if there's a security breach, they're not going to be able to get in. That's,
I was kind of hoping to see something in there about the feasibility of village-wide Wi-Fi. I mean, I assume that's a capital budget or a capital matter, right?
It probably wouldn't be capital initially. It probably, if we do that, we could. You'd probably want to hire a consultant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be more of an operational issue. Yep.
For the disaster recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So is this like having some of this network offsite?
Yeah, I'll let Lisa speak to that.
That's correct. It's redundancy of the network to make sure that we can talk to the network from wherever. But it literally is what happens if there's a fire in the server room or if there's a flood and we can't get to the village hall. Where can we set up and start pulling up different operations? Start pulling data and documents down from the cloud so that we can get critical software up and running right away. You know, you want your enterprise planning software up pretty quickly. You're going to need your building permit software up pretty quickly if there's some sort of a disaster in town and people need to start getting building plans and permits and whatnot. So it really is, how can you make your network work off-site if that's what you have to do? And what exactly, how can you replicate it? And it, at what point do different systems need to be up and running? What's critical? What's next phase? What's nice
so just,
to have?
It's just alternate connectivity to the cloud.
Yes, but it's in addition to the cloud and all the data that's stored up there, it really is just direct access as if we were here. You're setting up a village hall just off-site.
Okay, and then for, like, security, in case, like, do we have security built in case we're ever hacked? Do we have any of that built into our systems?
Oh, we always have. I mean, we've always had firewalls and different virus and security system detections.
And do we have any policies in place when it comes to just personal information and how that's
absolutely
distributed?
Yeah, we have a communications policy that employees are required to sign as part of our personnel policy manual.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of customer data, public data, we really have to follow what FOIA requires of us. But yeah, we have, especially for
transactions. Your question is, an employee taking data?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
not,
absolutely.
Not a FOIA.
In terms of how, who has access mm-hmm. to it mm-hmm. and safeguards that are put in when employees are handling
mm-hmm.
the kind of personal
yes.
information about our residents. So we have all,
mm-hmm.
make sure we have
we absolutely do.
All right. IT, and now we're first.
Software one. Provider news. That's a lot of that info.
Well, maybe look at this monitor.
Description.
But your employees sign a policy that they do not, you were saying they do sign a policy saying that they do.
We have a personal information protection policy. I don't know what employees.
Yeah, there's in our personnel manual, there's a communications policy section that specifically talks about access to confidential information, what you can and can't release, what you should and shouldn't be doing with our information, whether it's an employee's information or information and data and documents that are owned by the village of River Forest.
And then my next question is just like like in the compliance part of it, do we have, besides, not being, systems in place so that, personal information isn't shared, but in terms of like protecting our employees, do we have any kind of sexual harassment policies that are in place, or do they do education for that also?
Absolutely, it's all part of the personnel manual.
It's all part of it, and do you do it annually or just when they're hired?
I sit down with every new employee and go through the personnel policy manual. They get a copy of it, they sign off that they've received it. I'll highlight key policies. They get a copy of our safety manual. Training is something we do on a periodic and as-needed basis because we don't have a lot of turnover, but we do have had some staff turnover in the last few years, so we're due for that.
I didn't know if the government itself has policies set in place where they require you to, have your employees go through programs or whatever every so often, or that, you know, annually, do they have to sign that they're, you know, complying with the policies that you have?
There's obviously a variety of different policies, and not to get too bogged down in this, but the public safety, the operational departments, especially police, fire, public works, they may have some different schedules of when they do it. With the personnel manual, we do it when there's updates. We have employees sign off on that, but we haven't modified anything. We're going to be doing that pretty shortly, and then we'll go through the whole round again of making everybody sign off on it, talk about what's in it, train people. So
only when it's an update, not necessarily
annual.
On an annual basis,
yeah. It's the same information.
But IRMA does different types of training as well that you can.
IRMA offers training, and they also audit us for compliance every couple of years,
which is the insurance. So they offer, they'll come in and do programs for the employees.
Okay. All right, moving along, we'll go to the our street program. And so for streets this year, there are no nothing out here that should catch your eye or is different that has been in years past. Most of the work that we're doing this year is customary, pretty standard. So we'll go through that here. We've got street patching, and in fact, overall, if you look at the grading and the rating of the streets are in fairly good shape. And so we've been able to cut back the street patching portion of that a little bit this year. But we do have some money budgeted at about $85,000. We have sidewalk, curb, and gutter replacement like we do every year. And then we do have one alley set for improvement this year, and that's on the 0 to 100 block of Gale.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, looking at the map on 97, there's five alleys that all grade the same grade for the one Gale.
Mm-hmm.
How does the decision get made to do one when there's five in the same condition?
Well, we can't afford to do all five. And so we just make a determination based on what we think of the six, which one would be closest to 5.9.
Okay.
Certainly.
But your goal is to knock them all off.
Yeah, over time, yeah. As we've started to take on this expense, as you recall, we used to share this expense with the homeowners. We're now paying for it. 100%.
I know that the one is going to be covered in 17.
Right.
North Avenue.
Yes,
are there
that
any others in 17?
That we would discuss.
We're forgetting.
Some of those that are poorly rated, we can also do patching in. You know, if they're really bad.
Yeah.
Until we get to fully reconstruct them if needed. So that's another option.
No, I was just wondering how the process.
Our alley is what we can get in.
Well, actually, here's a.
We're going to dig it up. Personally.
Here's one that's worse. Here's a five.
Hey, the option is
the one behind 7-Eleven is a five.
Floated that idea.
The reason we're not doing that one is because of
it might end up being on top.
And then 11-11 Bonnie Bray, there's going to be a lot of construction up in the
okay.
area, so we'll kind of stay away from there.
All right, that makes sense. Okay, that the north south part of that alley,
right
behind 7-Eleven. Yeah. Okay. All right. It's hard to think 2 years out.
In those cases, with that particular alley, there one of the conditions of the approval of the plan development was that the developer improve the alley, that the portion that runs the length of the development at 1101 and 1111. So the developer will fund a portion of that project.
Yeah, that's the north-south part of it.
Yeah.
The east-west part of it is, according to the chart here, the worst alley in town.
Right.
So, okay.
All right. In terms of the actual resurfacing for next year, we've identified six streets, Vine, Hawthorne, Franklin, Ashland, William, and Clinton, and portions of those that are on your handouts. Once again, what we'll try to do, I know Jeff has talked about getting that out for bid towards the beginning of the construction season. We've had good luck with that process in terms of getting favorable bid results and then just getting that project knocked out, and we'll plan on doing that again this year. So typically after tonight's meeting, even though we wrap this into the budget, Jeff will then go and start and actually designing the SIP based on these streets.
Chicago Avenue is scheduled for when?
Hang on one second. Give me two more slides.
Okay.
Street maintenance program. So in addition to the resurfacing, we do maintenance. We do some crack sealing. We do some pavement rejuvenation, and we budget about $100,000 for that. So these are the streets that would get the pavement rejuvenation. If you recall, the pavement rejuvenation was the we got some feedback last year from folks who were noticing a kind of a different smell in town. It wasn't a horrible smell, but it was different, and so that's what that was. It's basically a chemical that is safe, that is applied to the street, that helps essentially reinforce the street and give it some more years. So these are the streets that will be getting that this year, in addition to the streets that we just resurfaced. So as soon as we resurface them, we're going to apply that pavement rejuvenation chemical to it, and again try to get as a couple more years out of the life of those streets. And so far we've been able to do some comparisons with that, because we did some testing in the back, and so far so good. We've been pleased with it, and we'll do a better job next year in terms of the communication of when that chemical is being applied, so that we can avoid some of the calls and questions about why does it smell kind of funky. It smells like pledge.
Lemony, right. Yeah. Lemony pledge kind of ammonia smell.
Right, right.
People felt me. It was more rated by something.
Yeah. Okay. So Chicago, yeah. So the surface transportation program, that is a resurfacing project that we would take on in fiscal year 19, which would be calendar year 18. And so this year we're going to design the project, and then the following year we would go out to bid through IDOT, and again that's one of those 80-20 splits, so we'd be looking at construction sometime next calendar year.
And what about Thatcher, because Thatcher is a disaster?
So interestingly enough, the state had come back to us and given us some indication that Thatcher north of Chicago to from Chicago to north was going to be resurfaced next year, but then we didn't hear anything from them. And then we got plans that they're resurfacing Madison from the tracks west to the river, which isn't in that bad a shape. So we've been trying to get a hold of our friends at IDOT and haven't gotten any answers yet. But it's on someone's radar. To what extent it gets resurfaced, we were hoping this coming year, but now we're not sure.
And that's state, not county?
Correct.
Okay. Thatcher. Yeah, at some point it was county on the other side.
As far as Chicago goes, Is anything significantly going to change?
So that's one of the things we're looking at. If you recall, the Traffic and Safety Commission, when it was evaluating requests for pedestrian crosswalks and things like that, wanted kind of a deeper dive, into some of those issues. And so the consultant engineering that we would use, probably the same one we used on Division, when they do their feasibility, they'll start to look at those things and some of those key intersections where there's a lot of pedestrian traffic. Right. And then municipal lighting, this is something we've actually decided to elevate to this fiscal year. We have some additional funding in the CIF, and those grants have come back out for a reimbursement from the state. The state says the money's coming. I said, okay. So this actually would be the final phase of our LED upgrades. So this would be for North Avenue and then Harlem. And so once these lights are upgraded, we'll have completed our LED light upgrades. And we've seen some savings somewhere in the neighborhood of, 30%-ish?
It ranges between 20 and 30% every month.
Yeah, in terms of our electric bills. So it's been good.
What is that in dollars?
I have a spreadsheet I can give it to you. I can't remember the dollars off the top of my head, but
ballpark.
It's a good amount, in the thousands.
Wow. Can we add a light pole on the southwest corner of Greenfield? I think we talked about this. Greenfield and Thatcher, so that you can actually see Greenfield, because right now if you're driving in the dark and you're going south, it's really hard to see that actual street.
It is.
So I don't know how complicated it would be to add a pole or a light, not on the Forest Preserve side, but on the village side.
Well, I like what Carmela said last night. How many people go into the
Dominican
parking lot?
Parking lot, and you're like slowing down because you can't see the actual.
And we know where we're going, so.
It's dark.
It is dark.
So I don't know if that's physically feasible.
Yeah, we can look at that.
Okay. I'm sure you got an extra pole.
Yeah. Well, we always keep extra poles because Thatcher usually is it's like a video game with people knocking them down. So we can do that.
That even tells you we probably need more lighting.
Yeah.
They need a little less napping. That's what they need.
Some of it's lighting. Some of it may be other.
Let's just call it that.
Yeah. You know what? You're right. It's lighting.
Exactly.
You're right. It's lighting. We'll get that fixed.
Right. Thank you.
No problem. Looking at the water and sewer fund, here's just a brief overview of that. Again, most of these things are consistent with our annual projects. Sewer relining or lining, that is in there. We'll determine those locations at a later date, but we're continuing on that with that project. Occasionally, we do have sewer port repairs that have to be made. We have valves at the pump station that are replaced on an ongoing basis, so this is for those valves in the basement. And then we do water meter replacements on an ongoing basis. So most of our water meters are in pretty good shape. They've been turned over recently, but again, each year we turn over another volume of those, and we're at about 100 for next year. Water main replacement, we've got one about 1,100 feet over at River Oaks and Auvergne, where we've had some water main breaks as of late, so we budgeted about $450,000 for that. Every year we also budget for hydrant replacement in case those need to be fixed, and so we put that into the budget. And then finally, one of our new innovative projects from our village engineer, one of the things we've run into on occasion is from residents who will have concerns about localized flooding. It's usually street flooding, so it's not necessarily an emergency that requires an immediate fix, but one of the things Jeff was talking about, we're calling it Parkway Pockets, patent pending for the time being, but is really to take the same theory that we use with the parking lot, right? So when we did the parking lot, we dig it up and we create this deep stone base, right? And that allows all the water then to filter through. The bricks are really just the pretty thing on top, but it's really the stones underneath that create that reservoir for the water. So what we're thinking of doing in a couple areas around town, 1100 block of Keystone's one that's had some issues, is creating that same theory in the parkway for a section of town. So you would dig it up, remove all the soil, put a series of just stone and gravel and things like that into the parkway, cover it back up, put a matting on top of it, and put grass back on top. So for the resident, they really wouldn't know anything. And then you would depress the curb in front of this, and so when the water goes to the stormwater basin, right, it would first channel, it would go into the basin and then overflow back into the parkway pocket, correct? Hope I'm saying this correct. Great, thank you. And then it would infiltrate that and build that up as well. So a lot of that localized flooding we get in a couple parts of town would be taken in by the pocket. So
mini reservoir.
So it's an idea. Yeah. It's not a huge cost because really you're just paying for Public Works to go out and dig it up and then put in the stone. So it's not a very expensive project. We'd have to work on the curbing a little bit.
So how do you determine how big this pocket is?
Make it as big or as small as you want. I mean, obviously, the more water it'll store.
Right, of course.
But the bigger you can make it, the greater benefit.
So you're going to look at, like, the 1,000 block at Keystone's a perfect example, right? We know that floods constantly and it's a problem. So do you do an analysis to say, okay, over a fairly significant rainfall, it creates this amount of ponding in the street, and therefore if that was to dump into a reservoir, we need a billion-gallon pocket.
You certainly could go that way, or the opposite kind of direction, where based on all the utilities and the parkway trees that are present, how much space do we have, how much storage can we provide in that space, so that should take a 2-inch rainfall and reduce the ponding from 6 inches to 2 inches or something like that. But it might be dependent upon how many utilities are there, where they're located, and how much space we actually have.
Okay. So, which is good. It's just that I think we need to also set expectations then, because, you know, if we say this is a solution to your ponding, when in reality it's just a reduction of some water, which is not bad. It's a great idea. Don't get me wrong. It's just that I think how we communicate it's going to be important.
It would be in a reduction. This is also an experiment, because this is something we haven't tried before. It's low cost in the scheme of sewer projects and things like that. So you're right. I think part of that's communicating it to the residents, saying, hey, we're going to try this. We're hoping it's going to help a little bit. It's not going to solve all your problems, certainly.
But has any town ever done like a full-blown French drain thing?
Yeah,
box the whole
culvert.
Plastic tank to hold it?
So I mean, that's another approach we could take. It always makes me nervous to put a void in a parkway or near a street or something like that, because it could be structurally damaged to the point where it could collapse.
Yeah.
With stone, you don't ever have to worry about that. Utility companies can auger through it. It's not a problem. There are some towns that I've seen do rain gardens throughout the entire parkway. Get some volume storage at grade because it's a depressional area, and also it helps kind of infiltrate the water a little better too. Around here, with the aesthetic being what it is, and as many parkway trees as we have, we don't really have that luxury, so we kind of need to chip away at it at different locations where we can.
And have we considered the village-owned property right over on Lake Street by the river that is vacant now to install some kind of a reservoir?
We have not, but that's something we could look at doing at some point. Yeah.
I thought we were looking at possible grant funding for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think long term, you know, depending on what happens with FEMA, if they still have the ability to get grants, you know, that's something we could look at.
Before we go any further, that's the hydrants. The blue stripping that's on the hydrants, is that relatively new?
So the fire department's way
of department, yeah.
They code them based on flow from the hydrant.
Right.
So it's a coding process. Like a red would be a very low flow hydrant, a blue would be a high flow hydrant.
I noticed yesterday for the first time ever driving down hill that all the hydrants had this blue reflective strip on it. Is that new? Or is that I never noticed it?
As Mark just explained, no, that's been around here for 15, 20 years.
It's so weird. I just noticed it yesterday.
Well, is it like, did you update it?
Well,
did you clean it?
Maybe that's what it's been the past 2 years.
Yeah.
All of that tape is new, and that's
probably
why I saw it. It's all
right. Yeah, it is fantastic, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so nice driving down. I could see every single hydrant for almost three blocks.
And hopefully they keep people from running them over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's kind of what
we'll
I
put that on
too.
The street
or
lights.
People from parking in front of them.
But they have the light and the thing.
At the entrance.
And
yeah.
I just was like, am I just never noticed that it was there before? Or
it's just all brand
new.
Yeah.
Fresh.
It looks great. It looks great.
Really nice. With the water main replacement,
mm-hmm.
are we going to allow, or like when we replace water main with our sewer project, is that when we brought that other company in that if residents wanted to replace their service line to the home, they'd be able to do that with the new main? Or
they guess they could. How do we? I honestly don't know how we've handled that.
Well, I think what you're referring to is the storm sewer connection.
Right.
We're not putting in the
okay.
new storm sewer here, so that wouldn't apply. But if they wanted a water service,
right.
the opportunity.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Didn't we contract with the company or hit? Or that was just for
that
the sewer.
For the storm.
Right, so is that something maybe we can look at to offer because then people can upgrade their service line while the
we have talked about
open.
The ever-changing IEPA rules
right.
and regulations on lead water services. At a bare minimum, we have to access everyone's water service at their B box because that's where we
right.
connect into the living main. So we've talked about where we excavate down to replace the service up to the D-box if we notice that it is a lead service at a bare minimum, say, notifying the resident
right.
saying this is a lead service,
that's
FYI. This is the contractor we've been working
right.
with. If you'd like to contact them, here's their contact
well, that's
information.
A great idea.
So at least it's a little proactive
right.
information
right.
for them that they don't have to go dig up their water service
yeah.
to know if it's lead or not.
So I think if you're in that process and anytime we do replace the water mains, that would obviously be good, just given our whole conversation about lead.
So
lead piping and so
you're saying that's part of the process anyway, right? So
we're thinking
that
new
process
we haven't
right.
dealt with thus far, but yeah, something we're planning on doing this year.
Okay.
Sure.
That's great. That's a good offering.
All right, and then just in the conclusion, you can see just how the costs cascade over the next 5 years. It's about a $12 billion plan over 5 years with roughly about $3.3 million next year, a majority of that coming out of the SIF fund. And then also SURF and water and sewer is the lion's share costs, funding sources for those. We also do defer projects every year. Most of those are vehicle-based and some equipment. So we always leave those on the radar screen for something you can go ahead and look and review. But nothing there is mission critical. Certainly anything that we felt that was critical in terms of replacement, we'll go ahead and handle. Other just real quick considerations, obviously we always keep an eye on our partnerships, new ideas. We continue to look at green opportunities within the infrastructure, thus the parkway pockets, things of that nature. And one of the things I know Trustee Conti brought up the last time was the fire station radios. We've been having some issues with that. So that's not in the plan per se, but something we'll be looking probably to either upgrade, replace, fix. We just don't know yet at this point, but that'll be something that'll be coming back to you in a future meeting. And then again, if anyone has any questions or concerns, we can address those here tonight. If there's things you would like to add, take out, we can have that discussion as well. And then we'll go ahead and do our best job to try to wrap up as many of these projects into next year's budget.
When we're looking at just retrofitting those lights on North and Harlem, is there a way to add another electric component to that so that if we wanted to emulate Elmwood Park's lovely Christmas decorations that we could actually do, because their new ones were really nice.
Yeah.
And if you have the poles that have
Are we doing the poles or just the fixtures?
You're not doing the poles, but I mean, I don't know if we even have the ability to add.
At this point, we don't. Okay. It's a 240 volt system, antiquated. And it doesn't provide for one
fan. Okay.
So that would have to be a fully separate circuit with a step down transformer. It can be done, but it would be costly.
So then it's something maybe in the future when we're looking at streetscape improvement.
Yes, I would say if we ultimately TIF that, then you would look at making those upgrades. Yeah.
Thank you.
The north side stormwater phase two. We've had a lot of rain. How'd it work? Phase one. So far, so good.
To me, the best barometer of a sewer project is our phone calls. And from now to me, but from your constituents. So I have not heard boo from anyone about any issues.
Nothing but
because, I mean, worst case scenario, we had frozen ground and a lot of rainfall. Yeah. And that.
Well, there was some flooding at the park there, Centennial, by Roosevelt.
Right.
Yeah, by the next day.
That's that whole frozen ground thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It got nowhere to go. And
Wait, why do you go in the basement zone?
Right.
No, it's good.
Yeah, try Cardi's backyard for the Parkway Pocket.
What'd you say?
Backyard pocket.
Well done, right. Everyone.
Yeah, thank you to Joan and Lisa, who do the lion's share work on this stuff, so, and all the operating departments for all their hard work.
Yeah.
So, good job.
Three cheers to our group. Thank you. And to you, Eric. Thank you for putting this all together. It was easy to follow, with the exception of some of the technical problems we've had, which I am convinced you'll get that solved. So with that, we will adjourn our, unless there's any further comments or questions from anybody, we will adjourn our committee of the whole meeting. If I can get a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.